Good morning and welcome to At Home This Morning, a magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove, and now even further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In the next hour, we'll be hearing from Dr. Sarah Jarvis once again, and the Royal Mail's Mark Street will be here with news of their new parcels collection service. We'll also hear from Crime Stoppers about how we can prevent online fraud, and the Co-op's Rebecca Birkbeck will explain how they are giving millions of pounds towards our community services. Later, I'll be finding out more about how COVID-19 is causing stress in our pets, and life coach Jacqueline Hurst will be telling us why now is a good time to reevaluate our life choices. Plus, Dr. John Martin will be explaining why the days of the old-fashioned stethoscope may be numbered. Now, in my last programme, we heard from Dr. Sarah Jarvis about Stoptober and other matters. Well, I'm very pleased to say that Dr. Sarah is joining us once again. Good morning.
A great pleasure to be back with you.
Thank you very much. And you're here to tell us about how lockdown living has made pain worse. Is that a general synopsis?
I think it's a very widespread problem. So this is a new survey commissioned by Nurofen. What they found was that backaches, headaches, joint pains and so on really do seem to be increasing. In terms of people experiencing more pain, 1 in 3 said they were getting more backaches or pains. Same for headaches. Nearly one in three, just over 1 in 4 said they were getting more joint pains, and neck aches, pains, muscle aches and things were also significantly worse. Now, what's interesting is it seems to be a combination of factors. The single biggest factor, according to this survey, was an increase in stress, with one in two people saying they were getting more pain because they were more stressed, and 1 in 3 saying it was because of changes in their sleep patterns. But what I think was interesting was that 1 in 3 people said it was because they're less physically active, whereas 1 in 5 people said they were doing more DIY or gardening, and 1 in 6 people said they were spending more time exercising. So it does seem that no matter which way you look at it, it can have an impact on your muscles and joints.
So it's not a question of we're all being more sedentary. We're actually getting out and about rather than working in an office.
Well, I think quite a lot of people, unfortunately, are being more sedentary. But no, you're quite right. Other people have got more time to spend on leisure activities because they're not commuting, perhaps more time to spend with their children. Now, of course, that's a benefit, but it can increase the amount of pain you get if you're doing exercise, DIY, gardening, that sort of thing, which you haven't done before. And unfortunately, working from home is almost certainly a culprit here. So 1 in 4 people said that a poor office or workstation setup was accounting for it. More time at looking at the TV, the computer, the laptop, 1 in 3 people. So perhaps it's not surprising that younger people, the 25 to 44 year olds, were much more likely to have that than older folk who were more likely to be retired.
Now, speaking personally, I've found it difficult to get to sleep lately, perhaps because I look at my tablet once I go to bed. Is that a bad thing to do?
It absolutely is, unless it's your tablet that you're supposed to be taking because you've got high blood pressure and you should take it just before you go to sleep. I don't think you're talking about that. So no, electronic light, blue light, can have a real impact on the quality of your sleep. And it's not a good idea to stimulate yourself too much just before you go to bed with an exciting, you know, TV program or even an exciting book. So we would recommend that if you're having problems sleeping, that you set yourself a routine. You go to bed at the same time, you get up at the same time, and that you have a wind down time before you go to bed, which is a technology free time.
So are we becoming a nation of pill lovers?
No, I don't think we are. There's a fundamental difference between acute pain, which is what we're talking about here. These are, you know, everyday pains, and so-called primary chronic pain. Now, chronic pain is pain that lasts for more than 3 months, but primary chronic pain is where there isn't an obvious explanation for it. There might have been a reason in the first place, but that reason has now gone, but you're still left with pain. And that's very, very different. There are concerns about taking too many medications. But in terms of this sort of pain, this sort of acute pain, There are several things you can do. The first is prevention, obviously. So think about your workstation, make sure you're set up properly. Secondly, understand your pain and how to manage it. So think about what might be triggering it. Get into the habit of lifting properly, change your jobs regularly so you don't overuse one muscle group. Then be proactive when you get pain. So identify those triggers and address them, but also treat the pain early and confidently. Because if you do leave it for too long, actually the pain, it could be harder to treat the pain. So whether it's exercise, stretching, massage, breathing, relaxation, and so on, all of those are going to help. And only then do you think about, should I be taking a painkiller? Because if it hasn't got rid of it, there's no reason why you shouldn't, unless obviously there's a medical reason you can't take a painkiller. So paracetamol is often used for headaches, although interestingly, anti-inflammatories such as ibuprofen can be more effective, particularly for tension headaches. But ibuprofen, of course, really effective in many cases for aches, pains, inflammation, and so on. So, you know, if the pain does persist, then, of course, you seek help from a healthcare professional. If you're concerned about whether you've got something serious going on, you can always go onto a reputable website like patient.info or NHS UK to talk about red flags. But really importantly, your pharmacist's always there.
Last time we spoke, we talked about Dr. Google and how we shouldn't rely too much on what we can see on our tablets and monitors. Does that still apply?
It absolutely does if the information is not reliable. So you need to know what are the reputable websites. And on the whole, by going to really reputable websites like patient.info, where everything is written by GPs for GPs and their patients, or by going to the NHS website, then you can rely on the information you're going to get.
Are we becoming concerned about the lack of interaction with our fellow workers because we're all working at home? And that's increasing our stress levels.
I don't think there's any question that there have been lots of causes of stress during the lockdown. Now, we know that actually a lot of people who previously took it for granted they had to go into the office are now working very effectively at home. And for lots of people, that lower level of interaction with your co-workers is more than offset by the fact that you're not having to commute to work anymore. However, we do know that people who've been very isolated, and we're talking there perhaps particularly about older people, people who are shielding, for them there has undoubtedly been a huge impact on mental health of lack of social interaction.
So is it okay to take a tablet?
Is it okay to take a tablet if you've got an acute pain? Yeah, absolutely. If you know what the pain is, I would actively encourage it if stretching, massage, breathing, relaxation and so on haven't done the trick. But clearly, if it persists, then you should speak to your pharmacist. If you think you might have something more serious going on, then you should look up a reputable website, speak to your pharmacist or get in touch with your GP.
Dr. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us again.
Pleasure as ever. All the best.
Now, have you ever stood in a queue in a post office carrying a parcel, waiting to go and not quite sure how much it's all going to cost and whether it's too big? Well, now Royal Mail, the postage, will actually collect it from your door. And joining us to tell us all about it, Mark Street from Royal Mail. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Tell me all about this new thing with the postage.
Well, yeah, I'm very happy to. Thanks very much for having me on the show. So from this week, what's happening is we've really changed the delivery round that we all know so well, in that not only do postmen and postwomen deliver parcels now, but they'll actually also collect them. So it's quite a big change, really. And it's designed to reflect, you know, the growing number of us who are shopping online, and the growing number of parcels and returns that we're seeing go through our network.
How easy is it to organise?
Well, it's very easy. I mean, we just ask people to go onto our website, royalmail.com/book collection. All you need to do is, if you do have a parcel, and as I mentioned, one of those return items, maybe it didn't fit, and it's in one of those packages that has prepaid postage, all you need to do is look at book in a slot with your postman and postwoman. We ask for, you know, this can be done up to 5 days in advance or up to 12 o'clock the night before. You book in a slot. There's a small fee of 60p if you're making a return. And then quite simply, on the agreed day, the postman or postwoman will take it away and put it into the network for you.
And are they able to collect it from, say, a porch or somewhere outside, or have you got to be in when they call?
No, you're absolutely right. We do have the option, if you're not around when our postman and postwoman make their daily round, of leaving it in a nominated safe place. So we ask customers to decide, and we give some guidance on what can be considered safe places. And we will, in those cases, pick up on your behalf, even if you're not there.
Wow, that's amazing. You talked about 60 pence. Is that the total cost, or is that just part of it?
No, so that's on top of the postage. You know, and this really is designed just to be another option for customers. We're also thinking about people who might not be able to leave their homes for whatever reason, something that we all know from the recent lockdown. But also, you know, we're all of us leading increasingly busy lives, and more time poor. So it's also an added level of convenience. If you don't particularly have time to get out and take that to another channel.
So how much is the overall cost?
As I mentioned, it's 60p small fee for returns. And then if you want to send a parcel, maybe it's a 72p charge on top of postage.
That's amazing. That's a very small charge indeed. I mean, is there any insurance built into that, or is that something you can add on?
Well, it's the same as our other services. So all of the rights, consumer rights, are the same as it would be if you send it through one of our parcel post boxes or through the post office. So nothing really changes from that perspective. You know, all we're doing is trying to give people another option if they so desire, and it fits around their lifestyle.
So do you think we will see the end of the traditional post office?
No, absolutely not. And you know, I mean, that would be terrible for us if that were the case, because we have so many of our important services that run through post office. They're one of our closest partners, and we're the first to say what an amazing job, you know, rural post offices and sub postmasters do. This really isn't at all designed to replace them. It's merely a complementary service to give customers more choice. And that's something that I think we all would like to do, and give people even more convenience in their everyday lives.
What about the staff? How do they feel about it?
Well, it's a really good question. We did a rollout, a soft launch in Bristol, and the feedback we've got from there from our colleagues has been really positive. You know, they've also said that customers really like the service. We're obviously working very closely with our union on this, and the whole booking in service is also designed to ensure that colleagues don't get waylaid by too many parcels at one time. There's a limit of 5 per address.
Mark, just before we say goodbye to you, can you give us the details of how people can log on to get this underway?
Of course. So all you need to do is go online to royalmail.com/bookcollect. And then everything there that you need in terms of the pricing, in terms of how it works, how the system works, and the booking mechanism is all on that place. So hopefully it should be self-explanatory from that point.
Wonderful. That's lovely. Thank you very much for joining us, Mark.
Thank you so much for having me.
We were hearing about pain relief from Dr. Sarah Jarvis, and also Mark Street with news on the Royal Mail's new parcel collection service, From Your Door. Now, we're told that there's a danger of online fraudsters, particularly in this climate of COVID and all the other problems that beset us. Well, joining us to tell us all about how we can avoid getting caught up in a fraud, online or otherwise, is Kate Johnson from Crime Stoppers. Good morning.
Good morning.
And how can we avoid online fraud?
I think you can avoid online fraud by not giving out details or personal information, bank account details, dates of birth, any key pertinent information, if you're not sure about where that information is going to or who's asking you.
That sounds very simple, but particularly for our older listeners, they can get confused perhaps sometimes. So is there a golden rule?
I think the golden rule would be not to give out information if you're not exactly sure where it's coming from. You know, if you're receiving a cold call telephone and you're not quite sure it's who they say that they are, don't give out any information and come off of the telephone. You can always take some time to think about that and then maybe check with the actual organisation if they've tried to get in touch with you.
Now, we don't want to frighten people, but I'm sure we've all had experience of the call coming from a call centre and you answer the telephone and there's nobody there, and then they will suddenly appear and say something like, this is BT, this is Amazon, and somebody else. And you know full well that it's not true. So what's the message there? Hang up?
Yes, hang up. You know, if in doubt, hang up. And, you know, we would encourage, you know, any listeners that have been approached around, you know, COVID scams and COVID schemes and, you know, to ask to take out a loan or have something in their name, to contact the Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline.
We'll talk some more in a moment. But that hotline, is there a particular number for that?
Yes, certainly. The number is open 24/7, 365 days a year on 0800 587 5030.
Okay, that's 0800 587 5030. And can it be accessed online as well?
Yes, it can be. It can be accessed. We've got a simple and secure anonymous form at covidfraudhotline.org. www.covidfraudhotline.org. It's been set up by the independent charity Crime Stoppers so we can take information safely and securely relating to COVID fraud.
Is COVID fraud on the increase?
Yes, very much so. Unfortunately, in any crisis, criminals will adapt what they're doing to fraudulently obtain funds. And, you know, whilst the COVID schemes that the government have brought out have helped millions and millions of people, there's a small minority of people who are fraudulently claiming, you know, funds from the government when they shouldn't be. And it's those people that Crime Stoppers wants to hear about. So we'd urge your listeners that if they're aware of any criminals that have been fraudulently obtaining COVID funding, to contact the Crime Stoppers COVID fraud hotline.
I mean, we've heard cases, haven't we, where takeaways have been masquerading as restaurants so that they can claim for the government's financial backing. Is that really widespread, or is that just a one-off?
You know, as I said, I think there's, you know, criminals will always find a way to kind of navigate their way around to obtain funding. So there has been some of that activity.
And the listener who's got an idea, are they protected? I mean, the last thing people want to do is to stick their head above the parapet. Is there a danger that they can be identified?
No, absolutely not. And that's why the government is set up in partnership with Crime Stoppers, because we're an independent charity and because we guarantee anonymity. So callers can phone, calls aren't recorded, calls can't be traced. There's no 1471 facility, and you'll not be asked your name. We don't want to know who you are. We only want to know what you know. So, you know, no personal details are given. And, you know, Crime Stoppers has been here since 1988. And in all that time, we've never once breached our promise of anonymity.
So Crime Stoppers, is it a voluntary organisation or is it a government funded one?
Crime Stoppers is an independent charity. We're not a government organisation. We take our funding from police forces, law enforcement and other commercial opportunities. So we have about 100 members of staff helping to fight crime.
And is that widespread across the whole of the UK?
All across the UK, yes.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us. And is there a final message for our listeners?
I think my final message would be, you know, if you have, you know, any concerns or you suspect somebody of committing COVID fraud, is to contact the COVID fraud hotline on 0800 587 5030.
And the website address again?
www.covidfraudhotline.org.
Further support is needed for community services, as our part of the world is at risk of social divide. Well, joining us via Zoom is Rebecca Birkbeck from the Co-op. Good morning.
Morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
Very well, thank you. I'm very pleased to be able to speak with you and your listeners.
Tell me, what's all this about? Is there a new survey?
That's right. So research from the Co-op, as you said, I'm the Director of Community and Shared Value at the Co-op. And our research shows that inequality is growing as a result of COVID. 29% of people said that they were seeing more inequality in their area, in their local area, as a result of the virus, which obviously we found pretty concerning. And so we asked them to share what they thought the biggest issues were impacting local communities since the coronavirus outbreak and lockdown. And people told us that, 56% of people told us that they were worried about poor mental health and that people were having increasing mental health issues. They were worried about food poverty and getting access to food, and also about youth inequality. So not so much that young people were more impacted by the virus, but that their futures and their opportunities in their lives would be impacted long term through the sort of economic downturn that we're now seeing.
So how have community support services been affected by the pandemic?
We work with over 4,000 charities at any given time. And we spoke to them as well, as you would expect. And we spoke to them at the beginning of the virus. And we said, how's it going? What are you seeing? And 64% of them said that they were seeing their funding really drop through the period, because of course all the normal things that you do to go out and about to raise funds, and particularly over the summer, we couldn't do. And so that was a real concern for us, because you've got a double whammy of funds drop whilst at the same time the need for their services actually increase. And that was when we resolved that we needed to do something to help.
What role do these services play?
They play an absolutely fundamental role, really. Obviously, there's been government help during the pandemic, but we know that we can't rely on government for everything. And the charity sector and the not-for-profit sector has a huge role to play at a really hyper-local level. So we saw great signs of cooperation during the depths of the pandemic. You know, in the same survey, 33% of people said that they noticed an increase in local spirit. And we saw that, didn't we, with the mutual aid groups springing up, offering to help and support neighbours. And the most successful of those were really working on a very hyper-local basis, really sort of street by street. So this type of organisation play a really, really important role. I mean, in Brighton, we have given sort of about £8.5 million around that to help support local causes since we started the Local Community Fund. Things like Safe Start in Brighton. Now, that's an after-school and holiday programme for families in Whitehawk. And, you know, there we're supporting something called the Crew Club, where they provide opportunity for young people and young families to take part in a really wide range of activities so that they can kind of be healthy and live lives that they can engage in their local communities, and that they're not limited by inequality. And I think where you're seeing an inequality score in our wellbeing index of 42 out of 100, where the average score is sort of in the 50s, you can see that that kind of local effort is really, really needed.
The Co-op, of course, is best known as a retailer.
Well, the Co-op, as a cooperative, we were set up really for our members to come together and do things together that they couldn't do individually. So, yes, we are a major retailer and also a major funeral care provider, and we have co-op insurance. But actually, one of the major principles of cooperation is concern for the community. So we are bringing something into the 21st century that we have been doing right since we started in 1844 with the Rochdale Pioneers. But because we're a retailer, we try and make it easy for our members to contribute through using our products and services. So we're going to be doubling the amount we give to local causes, and our members can get involved in that by going into to local stores and trading with us and signing up to becoming a co-op member, or by going online at coop.co.uk/membership, and people will find everything they need there to get involved. So, yes, we're a retailer, but it's absolutely not a surprise that the co-op would get involved in this, because that's what we've always done and that's what we're here for. The funds raised by members will be split two ways. They will support our local community fund, which is supporting thousands of grassroots community causes, and they will also support our Community Partnerships Fund, which is a newly created fund to create lasting change on these big issues. So access to food, mental well-being support, and education and employment for young people. And we've been doing that in partnership with like-minded organisations. Now, we are looking to pay out £15 million through the local community fund in November. And so this time next year, we will have expected to double that amount. So, you know, we'll be looking at probably around the 30 million mark. And as I explained earlier, this is a long term. So we're looking sort of over the next 10 years, we expect to be putting up to £300 million into local community.
That's amazing. Can you repeat the contact details for people?
I can do, yes. So that's at coop.co.uk/membership. Go online there and you'll find everything you need to know. It couldn't be easier.
Can they pop into the local store?
They can pop into the local store, and any colleague in their local store will be able to help them become a member and also explain how this is all going to work.
We're hearing from Crime Stoppers Kate Johnson and the Co-op's Rebecca Birkbeck. Now, Age UK, West Sussex, Brighton and Hove have just launched their Warm Homes programme. And joining us is Fiona May from Age UK. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Tell me, what is Warm Homes all about?
Well, this is an initiative that secured funding for and been able to deliver the last couple of years. So the Warm Homes is about supporting people to stay warm in their homes, obviously during this period of COVID that we're all going through. More people are going to be staying at home and struggling to warm their homes, because obviously that means they're going to have their heating on for longer. The programme is designed to support people that are either vulnerable in some way, that might be through poor health, or people that are on a very low income and so struggle to heat their homes.
So is this for people who live in their own homes or in rented accommodation or even in care homes?
It's not for care homes unless it is a setup where somebody would be paying their own utility bills, which is highly unlikely. But it is for people that are homeowners or renting.
Again, whether it's local authority or private rental?
No, it doesn't matter at all. It's anybody that's paying their own utility bills.
Yeah. What are the criteria to enable people? I gather they've got to be over 65.
Yes. So for this particular project, it is over 65. Receiving means-tested benefits, or they've got an income below 16,190. Or if they've got a long-term health condition and they're finding it hard to heat their home.
So how important is it to have a warm home? Because a lot of people I know have a difficulty of deciding whether to pay for heating or pay for food.
Our information advice service is a preventative service. So it's really important that we're helping people to prevent these things occurring. The key things around this is preventing people becoming unwell because they can't heat their homes, to try and avoid hospital admissions, and just to ensure that people can keep warmer during the winter months.
What exactly is involved? Does it mean people coming to visit you, or is it all remotely done on the phone or on the internet?
Well, in the past, pre-COVID, we used to go into people's homes and meet with them. We would carry out a benefit check for them. We would look at their whole situation. If somebody has some kind of health issue or just become frail, and I don't mean just lightly, somebody that may be frail through, you know, poor health, through arthritis, that type of thing, that then means that they might be entitled to a benefit called attendance allowance. And that's a non-means tested benefit. So, you know, it's worth giving our advisors a call to explore that particular benefit. And I know a lot of people don't like to claim benefits, but this really is for everyone. Even the Queen could apply for attendance allowance.
But she doesn't, presumably.
I don't know. That's confidential to her.
So how do people get in touch?
So to get in touch with us, our information and advice service, we've got a free phone number, which is 0800 019 1310. Or we have an email that people can email us and then we'll contact them back, which is information@ageukwsbh.org.uk.
How much capacity have you got?
What I would say is if somebody tries to get through, we are an extremely busy service across West Sussex and Brighton and Hove. So if somebody tries to get through and they have difficulty, please do keep trying because we are there to help you, but the demand for our service is high. However, when somebody's calling us, you know, we'll respond and deal with their inquiry. So we carry out most of our work over the phone, as I say, because of COVID. But we are for our home energy check. So that is people going into the home, our handyman service, and carrying out an assessment of the home and the client's situation. And that might entail them fitting protectors behind the radiator. It might be draft excluders, something like that. And this is all free of charge. So it is our help at home service, their handymen that are doing this. But for this particular service, it is free. If somebody comes through on that free phone number, we would then, after a discussion with them, we would route them then to our handyman service if it's appropriate for them.
Fiona, thank you very much for joining us. And can you repeat the free phone number and the email address?
Yes, of course I can, Chris. So it's 0800 019 1310 or email information@ageukwsbh.org.uk. Thank you, Chris.
While the pandemic has undoubtedly impacted on our own lives, it's also had an effect on our pets. And joining us now are pet behaviourist Charlotte Carr, cat owner Claire Guntrip, and her cat Lucy. First, Charlotte, can you please tell us what the key signs are in our pets that we need to be aware of?
So a lot of pets are noticing the changes that we've been having as well. So they don't really like to have their routine upset, and these changes that are affecting us are affecting them as well. And in fact, over half of owners have noticed the change in their cat's behaviour. So it is quite a lot of owners that are noticing these changes.
So why do you think that is? Why are cats affected?
I think because they do like their routine. They like things that are their own and at their own pace. So with the changes either being at home more or maybe just having a different routine at home, that they've noticed these and then that's what's impacting them.
Now we're also joined by Claire Guntrip and her cat Lucy. Good morning.
Good morning.
So has Lucy been affected?
She has, unfortunately. So her behaviour changed quite a lot. She started to scratch up my furniture again. She would keep running and hiding out the way. So it's been quite a stressful time with her.
What do you think people can do about it if their pets are showing problems, Charlotte?
So there are lots of things you could do. Maybe trying to get back to a similar routine every day, creating a comfortable area for your pet so that they have their own safe place that they can either hide in or retreat to and just relax in, as well as a Fellaway plug-in diffuser, which can help and create a calming environment and reassure your cat, as well as just playtime and reassurance and comfort. So just stroking whenever they want to and having that strong bond.
Do you think it's because the humans have been around more?
Yeah, definitely. So being around more, the cat has probably either got used to having someone around. So if someone did leave, they might not be as confident to be alone. as they once were, or maybe they like their independence, like many cats. So having someone around all the time, they need their own space that they're not really getting, which is causing them a bit of a worry.
So Claire, has Lucy been difficult, or is she sort of settling down now?
Now she's settling down, thankfully. I mean, like Charlotte said, we use the Fellaway infusers, and it's really, really helped. We've started to get sort of boxes put out for her because she loves to climb in things, and just generally just trying to be around but not around too much for her, and it seems to be working.
I've got a personal issue. We adopted a couple of stray cats, brother and sister, and apart from the fact they're always ready to eat, whatever time of day or night it may be, the girl cat has now taken to going outside in all weathers. But then in the evening, all she wants to do is sit on my lap. Is that a sign of stress?
A lot of owners have noticed clinginess. So if it's more than normal, it might be that she is seeking an extra bit of comfort from you. So clinginess has been doubled since the beginning of lockdown for a lot of owners. So I think maybe the cat is looking for you and you're the safe place for her. So maybe she's seeking that reassurance from you. But also it could just be natural, maybe that she's tired from a long day of exploring the garden and being brave outside. But definitely one to watch. There's so many different ways that cats communicate their stress, and sometimes it's quite hard to depict. So making sure you're watching them, seeing if there are any changes that you can take note of.
Is it something we should be thinking about taking the cats to the vet?
There's lots of things you can do to help reduce stress and worry and anxiety at home. So making sure they have enough resources, especially if it's a multi-cat house, and having Fellaway plugged in, which does create that calming environment and creating that safe place for them. But if there is anything that is extremely worrying for an owner, then definitely consulting their vet is a great option.
And is there somewhere on the web that people can go and find out more information?
Yeah, so fellaway.com has great advice and information about the products too, which is Fellaway, F-E-L-I-W-A-Y.com. And it also provides different advice on different situations. So just like yours with multi-cat household, there's blogs and advice specific for that.
Thank you both very much for joining us. And although we haven't heard from Lucy, I hope she's satisfied with the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We were joined by Fiona May from Age UK Brighton, Hove and West Sussex, and pet behaviourist Charlotte Carr, Claire Guntrip, and of course, her cat Lucy. Life as we know it has, of course, been totally transformed by coronavirus. And it's made us think our lives and our life goals. Well, joining us is Jacqueline Hurst, who's one of the UK's leading life coaches. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. How are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
I'm fine. We're lucky. We're well.
We're absolutely not. I've got friends who aren't well, who tested positive. They're seemingly cracking on. How important are life goals?
Chris, I think a life goal is very important. You know, we're human, right? So many of us want to change something, whether it's big or small. I think having a goal to become healthier and happier is always a good idea.
Is it healthier physically or mentally or both?
I'm a really big believer that your mental health is very, very important, as well as your physical health, as well as your emotional health. So I think both Vitality Life and I, you know, have come together because we both believe that your health in many ways is just very important. You know, there's that saying, isn't there, that your health is your wealth.
You mentioned there a survey. So what are the results shown?
We've got lots of research here that 59% of the UK have started to reassess what's important in life, Chris, and more than 80% of us are now likely to take action and make that life change, which is a staggering number.
How easy is it to make a change, as you're suggesting?
This is really about mindset, and I think that there's lots of tips and tricks that we could learn about in order to make a change and to make making the change easier.
I mean, a lot of people go back to New Year's Day and making new resolutions. Is that really what life coaching is all about, or is it more serious?
Life coaching is a really serious topic, and it's something where I'm a big believer that when we think we can, we do and we will. And if we think we can't, we don't. So it all really starts in the mind. So if we want to have a healthy mind and a healthy body, we've got to start to think about, you know, what we're thinking about and learn how to manage our mind correctly so that we feel better and then take better actions.
And what are the biggest life changes people can make?
You can make any change you want, and it doesn't have to be a huge change. It could be a small change. It could say, I'm just going to start to take a walk for 5 minutes a day. And that can be enough. That's one of the things I learned as I was going through my journey of life and learning that actually just doing one thing that could be small, like just taking a small walk, can be enough.
So it's literally starting from scratch. I mean, is it almost going back to childhood and learning to do things?
I think that whatever we put our mind to, we can achieve if our mind is right. So making a small change can be really beneficial to become healthier, you know, as I said, mentally, physically, emotionally. Just one small change can make a really big difference in your life.
What about the consumption of alcohol? Because a lot of people turn to alcohol and other drugs to get them out of depression or whatever. How can life goals change that?
I think you're absolutely right, Chris, about alcohol, especially in the UK. You know, we have a problem with that here for sure. And, you know, there's other countries that have the same. But I think, you know, alcohol is drinking alcohol is an action. And ultimately, that's because you're not feeling great. And that comes down to what you're thinking. So if you can start to understand your thought process a little bit better, you're going to feel better and take different actions. So it's all connected to your minds. All of this is possible to change, and it just depends whether you want to enough.
Jacqueline, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris. It's been a pleasure to chat today.
Now, I'm sure when we visited our GPs, we'd all seen them with the familiar stethoscope round our neck. Well, that was invented in 1816 by a French doctor, René Laennec. Well, somebody who's not quite that old is joining us this morning to tell us all about a new ultrasonic device. Now, that's Dr. John Martin. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning.
A long-held device, we're all familiar with it. So is it something that we can look forward to the next generation?
I think we're looking at the next generation stethoscope. You know, as a practicing physician, I learned and trained with a stethoscope and learned how to accurately listen to things. But I was always listening candidly and guessing, sometimes very good guesses. But now we have an ultrasound device that fits in your pocket, so I can see and know what's going on. It's really been a radical transformation on how we can advance the importance of imaging, of diagnostic tests right to the bedside.
And what difference will that make to the patient?
I think all patients can certainly remember a time when they were sent for a test. And whether that was for an ultrasound test or a chest x-ray or even the fancier test, the CT scan or an MR, it was always about going to the radiology department or going to hospital, waiting to get that appointment, waiting to get the test and waiting for the results. Now, once we've put ultrasound on a chip and made an entire cart-based ultrasound fit in the doctor's pocket, you don't have to be sent for the test anymore. If the doctor believes the test needs to be done to tell whether or not you have gallstones, they literally pull it out of their pocket, do a scan, and make a diagnosis right there in the doctor's office.
But is this something that this device, which is not cheap, is it? I mean, it's about just under £2,000. It's not something the general public will use, just purely the medical profession.
Right now, it will be the medical profession, and it's not cheap, but it's a tenth of the cost, if you will, of the typical ultrasound system. So normally, x-ray equipment or radiology equipment is something that is a system asset that doctors share. This is priced now to the point where every doctor can have their own. Now, we are planning and have started clinical studies in which patients can actually scan themselves to monitor chronic conditions like, for instance, heart failure where scans could be done in the home and keep you from having to go to a doctor's office. You can share those images through our secure cloud communication. So you could do the scan, the doctors can review it and help make the diagnosis while you're at home.
Now, of course, we're all aware of the dangers of relying on Dr. Google for diagnosis, but is this not a danger that people will either be lulled into a false sense of security or panicked by trying to do it themselves?
Well, I think we're going to take our journey into the future, if you will, to this next generation of the home very carefully. And we have very good tools to actually make it so that a patient can image themselves effectively. The physicians have the control to see the images to make sure that the good images are being done, and they will be doing the interpretation. And this is all forward thinking. Today, this Butterfly IQ ultrasound system is for GPs, and that is a big change in and of itself.
Looking to the future, where do you see this going?
I think eventually you will see every doctor, no matter what the specialty, whether a GP, emergency, critical care, or surgeon, will replace their stethoscope with a Butterfly IQ. So diagnostic imaging can go to the bedside. And then as we look forward for certain conditions, for specific patients, we will ultimately see it in the home. But this transformation is a big enough difference today for everyone to feel a huge impact, both making it more efficient for the patient and reducing the stress on NHS and the healthcare system. So what's typically a limited resource can now be available to all.
It sounds wonderful. And if somebody's intrigued by this, whether or not they're part of the medical profession, how can they get more information? Is there a website?
Yeah, you can go to the information at butterflynetwork.com, and we have all kinds of information that we're happy to share. The great stories in which Butterfly is actually changing the lives of patients and the care by doctors.
Dr. John, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck with your future research.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We were hearing there from Dr. John Martin about the latest technical development to help your GP. And before that, life coach Jacqueline Hurst was giving us some useful advice. But that just about brings us to the end of this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's brought to you by Brighton's local radio station, Radio Reverb, broadcasting on 97.2 FM, on digital radio, on your smart speaker, and online at radioreverb.com. And so, until we next meet over the airwaves, it's goodbye from me. However, don't forget that our executive producer, technical operator, and my co-presenter, Richard Davis, will be here with his next edition of the show in just 2 weeks. You've been listening to At Home This Morning, which is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb. And here, let me confirm that you can listen again to a selection of some of the recent shows by entering either Radio Reverb or Grey Matters Productions CIC into your internet browser, selecting the Listen Again tab, and then clicking on the edition you'd like to hear again. This is Chris English signing off as usual with Please Keep Safe. Bye for now.